Welcome to the Coffee Table on KBBI Homer. I'm your host, Kathleen Gustafson. This morning, you're going to hear a recording of part two of the Kenai Peninsula College Showcase Series. You heard part one of last week. The discussion is moderated by KPC Showcase Series Coordinator Dave Acheson. It focuses on wildlife, and the presentations are climate effects on moose, caribou, and Sitka black-tailed deer on the Kenai Peninsula and Prince William Sound with Dr. John Morton, and Imak Ilium Kip, The Ocean is Part of Me, Climate Change and Subsistence in the Chugach Region with Hope Roberts and Aaron Hsu. This conversation was recorded on December 9th as part of the Kenai Peninsula College Showcase Series. Now here's moderator Dave Acheson.
Welcome everybody to Kenai Peninsula College's second part of our two-part series, A Changing Kenai Peninsula, Climate Change's Possible Impact on the Future of Hunting and Fishing. I'm going to introduce John Morton, and then he's going to present, and then he will introduce Hope Roberts and Aaron Hsu, who will be doing the second half of the presentation. So we turn it over to John Morton. He recently retired from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service after 32 years as a biologist in Alaska, California, Guam, Maryland, and Wisconsin. He most recently was the supervisory biologist at the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge, where he focused on novel approaches to monitoring biodiversity and adapting to a rapidly warming climate. He continues to work with two interagency groups on new ways of thinking about climate adaptation and serves on the boards of the Alaska Wildlife Alliance and the Alaska Institute for Climate and Energy. So I'm going to turn it over to John.
There's a lot of people here that know what we have here for on the peninsula. We have game management unit 15 over on the western side of the Kenai Peninsula, 7 on the Seward side. We up by towards Anchorage, we have 14C, and then all around Prince William Sound, we have game management unit 6. And I want folks to remember that the rainforest on the Seward side of the peninsula in Prince William Sound, you're right, that's the Sitka spruce side. We're on the very, very northern extreme of that rainforest. And that rainforest goes all the way down to Northern California. What creates a situation where you jump to the western side of the peninsula, that's the transitional boreal forest where when we come onto the Soldotna side, we very quickly get into black spruce, white spruce, and Lutz spruce. And so it's a very different biome. It's much drier and fire prone, and it's a very different system. So moose, believe it or not, moose were not common in Prince William Sound at the turn of the last century. In fact, there were technically only 40 moose, and they were in two populations, and I put that in parentheses, indigenous moose. And there was one population here on the left at the end of this arrow, right? And that's in the Kings Bay area. And almost certainly those moose came from the Kenai Peninsula and wandered over that way down the Neliwan River system. And then the other one, there was a small population up here in the low river drainage, and almost certainly those moose came in from the Wrangell side and kind of slid through the glacial valley there and popped up there. But really, that's all the moose that were in the Prince William Sound area. And so in 1948, the Isaac Walton League in Cordova decided they wanted moose. And so between 1948 and 1957, the Isaac Walton League brought in moose, most of them from the Kenai Peninsula. And they brought them in as calves. And there were some moose also brought in later from the Anchorage area. But the picture down here in the right, this is a guy named Hollis Henrick. And he was, I believe he was the postmaster in Cordova, but in any event, he's feeding calves there in the in front of the post office there in Cordova, and they initially brought over 3. And those 24 moose basically is what got the moose population started in Game Management Unit 6 in the Prince William Sound area. So now that those 24 have kind of pumped up to, these are the current populations, give or take. We have about 1,250 moose in Game Management Unit 6, 2,000 or so up in Game Management Unit 14C, 1,000 in Game Management 7, and 6,000 over on the western side of the peninsula. And our annual harvest for this total area right now is about 700 moose a year. So a pretty hefty number. And I just want to remind people that, you know, on the western side of the peninsula here in the around Kenai-Saldatna area, that the, you know, Kenai National Wildlife Refuge has a long history of moose management. When it was enacted, back in 1941, it was called the Kenai National Moose Range, and its mission right up until Anilka in 1980 was, in fact, to create more moose. And what you see in the photo there in the, I think this is in the 60s and 70s, is you see these three big Laturno tree crushers. They're literally going across the landscape, crushing trees to create hardwood browse. It's kind of an interesting side note on the history of moose management here. When we switch over to caribou, it's a very different story here. What a lot of people don't realize is that the caribou that we have running around the Kenai right now were actually reintroduced. The native caribou was actually called Stone's caribou. Everything we know about the Stone's caribou is that it was a woodland caribou as opposed to a barren land caribou. So the circle I draw here is around the Kenai lowlands. We don't really know where it was. But shortly after that, Andrew Berg, the famous trapper there, reportedly killed the last caribou at Ptarmigan Head in Caribou Hills in 1912. So it wasn't, we didn't get much documentation there. So for several decades there really were no caribou on the Kenai Peninsula until the 1960s and again in the 1980s, ADF&G and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service cooperated and brought in caribou from the Nelchina herd. And if you recall, the Nelchina herd is a barren land caribou as opposed to a woodland. So they kind of settled out a little bit differently here on the Kenai. And so after they settled into it, we now have four herds on the Kenai numbering about 1,000 animals. So you have the Fox River herd with about 75, the Kili River herd, 250, Kenai Mountain herd, about 500, and the Kenai Lowland herd, about 150. And the annual harvest for all four herds is only about 20 to 30 animals a year, so not a lot. A lot of people don't appreciate that deer were not even up here. Sitka blacktail deer did not even extend this far north naturally. You know, they're from Southeast Alaska. They were introduced in 1916. A herd of 24 deer were brought into two islands, the Hitchinbrook and the Hawkins Island near Cordova, and released. And this was brought in by the Cordova Chamber of Commerce, a guy named Ike Hanlon. And this is on the docks of Sitka, which is where he was catching these deer. And the way he would do this is he had his dog. His dog's name was Tuffy. And Tuffy would herd the deer down to the ocean. And he would be sitting down there on a skiff. And the dog would chase the deer into the water. And he would boat up to the deer while they were swimming. He would grab them from the hind legs and actually pull them on board from the hind legs, wrap their legs in cloth so they wouldn't damage themselves. And he would tie up the hind legs first and then pull them up a little bit further and tie up the front legs. 24 deer introduced to Game Management Unit 6, a little over 100 years ago. And now we have 20,000 deer in Game Management Unit 6 with an annual harvest of about 2,300. So that's a pretty spectacular rate of return for a pretty small investment there. Sitka blacktail deer are not supposed to occur on the Kenai Peninsula. They're over in the Prince William Sound area and they're on the islands and the adjacent mainland there. But there's plenty of evidence that Sitka blacktail deer are moving onto the peninsula. These are small tracks down there on the Resurrection River that were taken a year or two ago, sent to me by a ranger over at Kenai Fjords National Park. I think most people know that there's been documentations of blacktail deer showing up in Anchorage and along the railroad tracks up there in Portage. They're all around us. They're just popping up in low numbers. That's the past and the present. And now I want to forecast forward. What I'm going to talk about here is climate envelope modeling. Climate envelope modeling, obviously from a calculation perspective, it's very, very difficult. But in a concept, it's not very hard. Basically, you take a widget and you statistically relate a climate envelope to it, you know, based on precipitation and temperature, different ways of expressing that. And then the idea is that as the climate warms and that envelope moves, the assumption is that whatever widget you're modeling is going to follow that. And it may take time to get there, but the idea is that it wants to stay in that climate. Looking at the Kenai Peninsula, the eastern side of the peninsula, the rainforest side, doesn't change that much. It basically stays a rainforest. The western side of the peninsula, however, really, really wants to change. It basically wants to go from a boreal forest to a grassland. Obviously, we're not going to go there that fast in 100 years. But what it's really trying to tell you is that the system is drying and the system is moving in a different way that probably won't be forested. Looking at what will be afforested, and when I say afforested, I mean what is going to become a forest that has never been a forest. And then also what was a forest and will not be a forest anymore, and that's deforestation. One more thing that I think is relevant to ungulates, to the three species that we're talking about, is snowpack. Snowpack's a big driver. So if I'm going to summarize this really quickly, we're going to start seeing, you know, afforestation of alpine tundra. We're going to see deforestation in southwest Kenai, in the southwestern Kenai Peninsula. And the other thing that we're going to expect in the Prince William Sound area is coastal afforestation, and both in the, along the coast and higher up in the alpine, and reduced snow depth along the Prince William Sound. I'm going to show you, this is more climate envelope modeling. And the reason why you have to interpret this differently is if you think about the story I told you about the past history of moose, caribou, and Sitka black-tailed deer, is that they've been introduced in fairly recent times to different parts of Prince William Sound and to the Kenai Peninsula. So the bottom line is they're, in a lot of instances, they're expanding their range right now relative to what it could be. The guy I want to acknowledge here is Falk Huettman, who is a very, very smart and wonderful modeler up at the University of Alaska Fairbanks that I've collaborated with many times over the years. The potential distribution, this is showing climate envelope models for 1971 through 2010 current and 2069 future. What I want you to do is not get too hung up on looking at the current distributions as if they're real. The more important piece is how the distributions in the 1971 through 2010, how they change from there to 2069. So what we're trying to do is get a sense of the change in trajectory. What you're really seeing is the moose distribution wanting to move inland, away from the coast, and generally northward, up towards higher elevations. So that's kind of the general gestalt of what we think is going to start happening with moose as you move forward. When you look at caribou, we are not good caribou habitat based on this modeling. Surprisingly, that little bit of yellow that you see there in the 1971 through 2010 actually is a good reflection of our current distribution of caribou. And what you see when you go to 2069 is that the fingerprint there gets weaker. And again, it's this idea that caribou distributions are going to want to shift northward and basically into higher elevations as we move into a warming climate. And this is Sitka black-tailed deer. And this is what I was saying earlier about the fact that you can't get too hung up on the distribution, because if you look at what you're seeing here in 1971 through 2010, it's showing the current distribution of Sitka black-tailed deer all down the western side of the Kenai Peninsula. And we know that that's not true, but we also know that that's really, really good habitat for Sitka black-tailed deer, and it's just a matter of time before they get there. So if you look at it from 1971, the current distribution, and again, looking at the future distribution, what you're seeing again is Sitka black-tailed deer basically pulling away from the coast. You know, their habitat does not look favorable from a climate envelope perspective. So the bottom line is, again, the species are going to tend to move a little bit northward and a little bit towards higher elevations. So to kind of summarize it, looking at that second point there, is we expect expanding distributions northwards and towards higher elevations for all three species. An interesting piece is caribou and deer ranges do not overlap in the future, and that is what we would expect them to do. And moose are widely but patchily distributed, but they do overlap with all three species. or with the other two species, deer in coastal areas and caribou in the western Kenai Peninsula. And this is important that all three species overlap, and I'll show you why in a minute here. The take-home message on this, I hope you're getting here, is that we can look at the distribution and abundance of all three species here. And our best guess, because, you know, admittedly, this is based on modeling, but at the same time, it's kind of weak modeling, and I'd be the first one to say that. We're going to expect the distribution of moose, caribou to remain the same or decrease. We expect Sitka black-tailed deer to increase. We expect the abundance of moose to increase. We expect the abundance of caribou to decrease. And we expect Sitka black-tailed deer to increase. So overall, black-tailed deer are going to do really well in the future. There is a lot of other factors that really affect this forecasted change. And this is where we start getting into the reality of what we expect, you know, what's playing out on the landscape. Because all I've really shown you was the forecasting based strictly on climate and not on all the mechanistic pieces like fire and invasive species. And more importantly, new wildlife diseases that are going to show up on the landscape here pretty soon. So I just want to touch on a few of the other drivers that are actually going to affect as much as the climate will be is very important. One of the really big ones is people forget sometimes that this is the Kenai Peninsula. We're a peninsula. We're connected to the adjacent mainland by a very narrow strip of land. It's that little isthmus between Portage and Prince William Sound. It's only 10 miles wide, and a good chunk of it is still glaciated. When we talk about species moving around, whether they're moving northward in latitude or upward in elevation, the reality is that that isthmus is a barrier. It's tough for animals to come from the mainland to the peninsula or from the peninsula to the mainland. And we know this is true because there's been a lot of genetic work. Moose, wolverines, and brown bear, our peninsula populations are all different genetically than the adjacent mainland populations. And we know that to be true because of the genetics work that's already been done. In other words, we're an insular on the Kenai Peninsula. We're almost an island, but not quite. Another one, when we talk specifically about moose, is right now, it's kind of stunning. The number, this is just for the Kenai Peninsula, and I didn't look at Anchorage, in the Anchorage area. But on the Kenai Peninsula right now, our moose vehicle collision rate is as high as the number of moose that are legally harvested during the general registration hunt on the Kenai Peninsula. Both entities are killing about 250 moose per year, so 500 moose total. You know, that's kind of a stunning statistic, and moose vehicle collisions are only going to go up. They're not going to go down. It's a long-term problem for us here on the Sterling Seward area. And this is kind of a fluke, but it's also something that's actually kind of logical. We're up here in the Kenai Mountains. We're looking westward out over Skelak Lake. What we have here is a pile of dead caribou. These were found in 2002. And the reason we found them is because we have radio collars, VHF collars out on caribou, so we can find the herds and count the, you know, number of animals in the herd. And in this instance, there were this particular avalanche killed population was 143 dead animals. And in the following year, 2003, we found two more avalanche killed small, you know, groups of animals that were killed, numbering, I forget now, 40 or 50. But in total, in those 2 years to avalanches, we lost about 200 animals. And when you talk about 200 animals out of a total population on the Kenai Peninsula of about 1,000, we're talking about 20% of the population dying from avalanches. And this is the kind of thing that you're going to expect in a warming climate. So even though this is kind of a fluke, I would also argue this is something that may happen more often than not. You know, this is the 2019 Swan Lake fire. And you can see the Sterling Highway down there, and that's a helicopter rotor there. So you get a size sense of the magnitude of that fire. Everybody knows it was a big fire. Fire also benefits moose because of the browse that come back after a really intense fire. Here's something that a lot of people don't think about. When you look at the Kenai Lowland, this is the caribou herd now, and this is, you're looking at some GPS collar data there, movement data. I think everybody knows that the caribou, they come into calf in the at the mouth of the Kenai River, and they, you know, stretch up to the airport, and they go all the way down to Kasilof, and they're basically wintering in this area, and lots of people see them along K Beach Road and over on the Spur Highway as well. But what a lot of folks don't appreciate is that they winter, or they did winter, up off the Mystery Creek area. And of course, this is the area that burned last year. And the reason why they wintered there is because they feed on arboreal lichen that were mature black spruce, and all those mature black spruce burned up. So I don't even know where they winter right now. They're showing up in weird places this past year, places in Sterling and things like that where they don't normally are. So, you know, the bottom line is fire is great for moose, but not necessarily great for caribou, depending on where it occurs. I think most folks know that white-tailed deer and mule deer are not supposed to occur in Alaska. So this is right out of Wikipedia. This is showing you the distribution of white-tailed deer. And this upper photo here, or upper map rather, is showing you the distribution of mule deer. And neither one comes into Alaska. Well, guess what? As of the 2019-2020 hunting season, this is a page right out of the regs, we now have hunting seasons for both populations, because we now have populations both in the Haines area and in the Fairbanks area, and they're producing fawns. So we now have breeding populations in Alaska, and it happened that quickly. It's just like one day they're not here, and then the next day they're boom, it's happening. And the reason why that matters is because deer, regardless of who gets here, deer are carrying a lot of things that may not be good for our moose. And again, this is a climate phenomenon, but it's a kind of an indirect one, right? And so here's a case of chronic wasting disease. To the best of our knowledge, chronic wasting disease does not occur in Alaska, but the first confirmed case of chronic wasting disease in moose in Canada is just down in Alberta, and that was in 2012. And the bottom line is that's not very far from Southeast Alaska, and it's working its way northwards. So eventually it will get here. And the thing that's kind of distressful about that is these are some data I'm showing here from 2018. The province folks were taking samples of mule deer and white-tailed deer, and there's some pretty heavy positive hits on both mule deer and white-tailed deer for chronic wasting disease. And of course, these are the deer that are showing up in Alaska. Winter tick is even closer. This is a very distressful thing. I think people have seen this it's shown up in the paper stories about winter tick getting closer and closer. It's been found on moose, caribou, and deer in the Yukon, Alberta, Northwest Territories, and British Columbia. It is all around us, and it's just a matter of time before it shows up. It's not a matter of if, it's just a matter of when. And lastly, getting even closer to home is, you know, I'm the Mycoplasma ovi pneumonia, which is, we call for short, MOVI. This is a bacteria that causes pneumonia that's actually caused a few deaths, basically kills down in the Colorado area, and we're talking Rocky Mountain sheep. And this has kind of popped up recently in populations here in the Wrangell and the Kenai and in the Kenai Mountains. I mentioned earlier at the beginning that this is coming out of a chapter, and it's out of this book, Climate Change Vulnerability Assessment for Chugach National Forest in the Kenai Peninsula. And you know, just to summarize very quickly, moose are likely to increase in the short run. Caribou are likely to decrease in the short run. Sitka black-tailed deer almost certainly will increase in the short run. And in the longer term, this uncertainty increases, not because there's any uncertainty about climate warming. We know that that's going to happen. But the bigger deal is we also know there's going to be a lot of novel pathogens showing up, and they will be interacting with a lot of these changing ecological drivers. And I'm going to hoist this off to Aaron Hsu and Hope Roberts. Aaron, I know a little bit about. She and I have interacted quite a bit over the last couple of years, and she's the climate change coordinator for Chugach Regional Resource Commission. And she's really doing rock star stuff over there. And Hope Roberts, she was in the last week's presentation. And actually, I don't know Hope's background, so hopefully Hope and or Aaron can introduce her, because I only know a little bit about her, and I'm looking forward to finding out more. So I'll pass it to you guys.